Thank you, Nicholas, and thank you for inviting us to come here today. I think I've been upgraded or downgraded. I'm not sure. I was supposed to be the moderator, but now it's some sort of double act. I think, as Martin alluded to a little earlier on, many sectors are facing quite a challenging environment. Chemical tankers is protected from that to a certain extent, but it's certainly not immune. We've seen earnings which have been eroded, freight rates which have decreased, and at the same time, fuel prices have been gradually increasing as well. Yet, volume growth is actually quite robust, and it's broadly in line with fleet growth at the moment. So the first question really to Hans is, why do you think freight rates have been so adversely affected?
All right, and this is you know, where the complication starts. I love the dry bulk. It's one market, one answer. And in chemicals, that's really not the case. If you're an industrial supplier, and typically stainless steel, high contracted, you've gone through the current market pretty robustly. Stolt, first two quarters, good. When I look at Team Tankers, we have exactly the same. Our European short sea fleet, stainless steel, 65% contracted, very solid, renewals are good. If you're much more spot driven, you've really seen rates come down. And I think that's been also very much tied to the product market. And I think it's one that everyone got wrong. It's so bad when you have handies doing 4 to 6 or 8, they're just hoovering up everything. So that really has had a bigger impact than expected. And that's brought the certainly the spot market also down in the chemicals.
Sure, and I think the palm oils market has also caused a certain downwards impact in sentiment on the market. Most of this, as we know, is caused by El Nino, the weather phenomenon, which has resulted in production of palms has been down. And this is a key backhaul or front haul, whichever way you look at it, for trade from the Straits back into continent for chemical tankers. So that has also had a negative impact on the freight environment.
Yeah, you know, 2016 is sort of a year of imbalance. Late 15, early 16, fantastic exports from the US Gulf to Asia. We saw methanol going actually in pretty decent volumes, only very briefly. Put an awful lot of ships into Asia when the deliveries of a lot of MRs and bigger chemical ships started. On top of that, less palm because of El Nino, and on top of that, soy oil was much more competitive out of South America. That happened when palm was actually less attractive also because of export tariffs. So people started to ballast ships to South America, but the soy was short-lived, so they didn't find much solace there either. And I'd say and I'm going to leave most of the product discussion to the guys in the afternoon, but it doesn't look like oil demand or product demand is down much, but refinery margins are down, so there's been much more drawdown from storage than there has been transportation and trading. And then on top of that, there hasn't been much ARB activity. So a lot of imbalances that we don't usually see.
Sure. And overall trade in the specialized products markets, as we call it in Clarksons, or to put it another way, the chemical tanker business is up 4.1% in 2015, so relatively robust. In fact, over the last 30 years, it's only contracted once, and that was in 1992, which I think goes to show you the sort of healthy mega trend, for want of a better expression, for the business. Of course, the chemical tanker supply chain intrinsically linked with automobile sales, housing, and also the cosmetics business as well, especially on the vegetable oil side. 2016, Clarksons Plateau Securities are expecting trade growth broadly in line, about 3.9% per annum. So I mean, Hans, what do you see going forwards are the key drivers of trade to the chemical tanker business?
You know, I think that mega trend will continue. Population growth, a lot of demand still, India, Indonesia, Brazil, the Philippines, Vietnam, and still also in China. So I think the mega trend stays. And if anything, it's getting a bit of a boost because, you know, the two most attractive places to produce petrochemicals are really the U.S. Gulf because of shale and the Middle East Gulf. And both of those, when you look at exports, that's really long ton-mile trade. So for the first time in about 15 years, we're going to see a change. Instead of shorter voyage duration, we're seeing longer voyages. So one, absolute amount of trade increasing, and two, ton miles going up. So the mega trend's good. And then you have to look at the supply side. But that might have been your next question.
In a moment.
All right.
In a moment. I think you've touched on the lower oil price. It has numerous effects on the chemical and tanker business. And one of those key effects, as you touched on there, is regional production competitiveness. We've been in Budapest a few days ago at the European Chemical Conference. What do you think the sort of future is for the intra-European demand? Because that's, of course, very key to your to Team Tankers fleet themselves.
You know, I think Europe overall, I think there's not much growth on the chemical side there. I think we're going to see more imports from the Middle East and also potentially from the US. So I think there'll be more break bulk. I think the Med, where we are particularly active, we're going to see better growth there. That's also because they're coming from a much lower base. You know, the Med was much harder hit in the recent crisis, and it's coming back slowly but surely. But I think more imports and more break bulk and less production, certainly not much growth in Europe.
Sure. I think if there's one perfect storm for Europe at the moment in terms of chemical production is now with a lower oil price. Of course, most of the chemical crackers are naphtha fed. That means their input costs have reduced. We've also seen in the press INEOS recently are now importing ethane from the US because of that cost advantage. Quite whether we see the UK producing its own chemicals on the back of its own shale gas remains to be seen, but I know, again, those companies see that on the horizon in the next 4 to 5 years. But broadly speaking, absolutely agree with you about the trade changes going forwards. End-user demand for chemicals is intrinsically linked to GDP. If you were to consider that Europe as a whole may continue GDP growth between 1% and 2% per annum, I think that still creates a positive effect for the sort of distribution tonnage, the short-haul tonnage, which Team Tankers are in within Europe as a region.
Yeah, and then you have to add in the supply side of things. And I think Martin Stopford had a slide up there earlier today, 13%, 14% growth in the order book for chemical tankers. And that's about right. But you really have to look where is that happening. You know, it's 0 to 3 in the regional trade, depending on where you cut off, you know, size-wise, and more like 20 to 25, maybe even a little bit higher for the deep-sea trade. So if you're on that regional side, I think that's certainly in the short term one of the few, you know, highlights in the chemical tanker industry. And these small ships, there's a reason there's no order book. You know, the new players, very difficult to get in. You can make decent money if you have an established fleet, but they're not at replacement value. So there's some way to go, and I think there's some opportunity to keep on improving rates as you get closer to that level.
Sure, and I think as Hans alluded to talk about the chemical tanker business generally is a little problematic. We should probably more view it as a number of subsectors linked together under that banner. As you well know, we've seen a lot of investment in the larger than 17,000 deadweight ship types. Most of that has actually been in the stainless steel sector. This happened really 2 to 3 years ago. A lot of it at the time was driven from private equity investment, willing to get into sectors which had more of a proven residual value and was probably only really one of the key sectors which I think you could consider a benchmark ship type. We're going to see quite a bit of growth, I think, generally in the stainless steel fleet this year, which again may arguably place some downwards pressure, or is already placing some downwards pressure on the freight markets. But it is very much a two-tier story. If you look, less than 17,000 deadweight, that order book is around about 4% of the in-service fleet by deadweight. So many of the key sectors, intra-European tonnage included, you will see the available fleet will be contracting at quite a significant rate. One key thing we should always talk about, I think, is China. Flipping back to the demand side, the world's largest chemical consumer now accounts for around about a quarter of total global imports of chemicals. So it has a huge influence on our markets. We've all read in the wider press about the economic downshifts in their economy. I have my own view on it, but let's start with you, Hans. Do you see that as having much of an impact on a chemical tanker business day to day?
Up to now, China's been very resilient. You know, there's a shift of, and the dry belt people have seen this, where the industrial side of things has really come off. Steel, iron ore, coal, the growth rates haven't kept up. Of course, when you're doubling your economy every 8, 9, 10 years, you don't need to have 10% all the time, and it's still a big impact. But the industrial side has slowed down. They move more into consumerism. What is it? 12 million cars sold in 2015, more than anywhere else. More being projected for this year. So consumerism is supporting import and production there as well. And it's actually been remarkably strong, but we do see a bit of a slowdown. And I think more worrying is some of the investment that people have talked about. A lot of the methanol that was projected to go to China is based on these MTO plants, methanol to olefins. And there seems to be a slowdown there. And, you know, I think we talked about the mega trend being good, but maybe not as good as projected a year or two ago. So I think people should take a breather for a moment. If everyone keeps on ordering these ships, we're going to have the same kind of overhang that they had in the dry bulk sector and others. You know, a number of yards have gone bankrupt recently, so orders have been cancelled or failed, and that's probably a pretty good chance for investors and operators to take a breather, keep that money in their pocket, don't go to another yard and spend that money. But make sure that you're strong to get through the market. And maybe China is not going to be quite as big as people anticipated.
Yeah, I think you can flip China one of two ways. If I was quite bullish on it, I would suggest that, yes, their economy is maybe growing between 6 and 7% per annum, whichever figures you choose to believe. At the same time, their import demand for chemicals was up about 8%, 15 compared to 14. For the first half of this year, despite that, downwards impact from palm oils is actually up 4% year on year compared to the same period from 2015. You touched on the automobile industry, which is a key sector, as I mentioned, for the chemical tanker business. Just some little stats. I think in the US, for every 1,000 people, there are almost 1,000 cars, which is phenomenal because that includes the entirety of the population. In China, I think that stat is for every 1,000 people, there are 200 cars. And as you rightly say, their economy is moving more and more into one of away from the primary and the secondary sectors into more of a tertiary sector. And as they develop and they become more consumerized, as you put it, Hans, I think that usually has a link to increased disposable income, which also compounds the impact on chemical tanker demand. To put it, if I was a bear, you could also look to the housing market. U.S., at the height of the subprime mortgage crisis, the average house price to earnings ratio was about 9 to 1. I think in China at the moment, in tier one cities, that's 15 to 1. So again, a housing bubble key to the chemical tanker sector. If there were a bubble and that did go pop, then that could have a downwards impact on chemical tanker demand. That's excluding, of course, their own chemical production, which you talked about. There is a significant amount of projects that China has themselves, so we may well in future years also see them increasing their exports, which again also depends on the oil price. So lots of moving parts, but at the moment everything we're seeing is still positive regarding Chinese trade demand.
Yes, but I think you have to take a bit of a forward view, right? And although TEAM is very comfortable operating also big ships, we've sold about 20% of our fleet in the last year. We saw asset prices going down. We exited the deep sea stainless. We had a fairly small position. But with an order book of 25% or so, it wasn't, I don't think, that difficult to see that pressure was going to go up. So we exited, we sold them all, sold some other ships that didn't fit so well. I think interested to get back in, but at a really competitive cost number. And we have a bit of time, I think. So it's good to have a strong balance sheet. It's nice to have raised some money. I think there are going to be opportunities coming.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the news in the press over the last few months. Stolt-Nielsen currently in the process of acquiring Joe Tanker's chemical business. Do you think, Hans, that sets the scene for further potential M&A activity in the chemical tanker sector?
I hope so. I think Stolt buying Joe, the headline is bigger than reality. They had six of the ships already. So they're getting seven ships today. I think it's about a 1.5% consolidation. But they're also getting the expansion. And that's, I think, really nice. They're getting new ships that have already been ordered, so they don't have to go to the new building market themselves and increase that overhang. So I think when you look at it in total, that's a good thing. You know, in the past, it's often been the operators who ordered too many ships and ended whenever there was a good market. Now it's the operators have been fairly conservative. But private equity hedge funds have put an awful lot of money into shipping. They started about 3-4 years ago. They don't have an endless amount of time. They want to get out. It hasn't been that much fun, I think, up to now. But I think there's a marriage to be done so that people shouldn't buy more or order more ships. But, you know, some of these new ships that have been ordered, but where there's really no platform, need to end up with those operators again.
Sure. And just pulling back a little bit to what you were talking about, average traded distances and the inefficiencies and the productivity of the fleet. And I just wanted to touch on this because I think it's massively important for our sector, more so arguably than many other sectors, excluding some of the more niche ones. I think we've seen average haul of the chemical tanker fleet has declined for about 12 out of the last 15 years. Last year, it actually increased for the first time. And if you were to look at how much the fleet should grow this year and combined with demand growth, I think that increase in average haul is absolutely key to the market balance and the utilization of the fleet. Do you have any comments on that, Hans? Any views?
I think that's right. I think the production, you know, growth in the Middle East Gulf and the U.S. Gulf, it's all long-haul export, no matter where you're going. Middle East, it's so imbalanced. You're having to ballast in because there's no cargo going in or not enough. Every marginal ton means ballast in. So it's a high ton mile growth. So I think we are going to see that transition. That's going to help. I think for some of the older fleet, if you're looking at a fourth and fifth survey, maybe this ballast water convention starting on September 8th next year, that will accelerate a little bit of scrapping in the tanker fleet as well.
Sure.
And we're going to need all of it, I think.
And I think there's a number of other inefficiencies in the supply chain. I mean, we talk about the US, shale gas, $160 billion of new investment in chemical projects, most of them being methanol, as Hans touched on. But also, I think we need to talk about infrastructure a little bit as well, because in the Houston Ship Channel, I think infrastructure is largely considered to be behind those capacity additions. We already see quite severe problems at times in that area in terms of port congestion. So this is decreasing the productivity of the fleet all the time, which in essence is increasing the utilization. How do you see that sort of playing out going forwards, and how are team dealing with that specifically?
You know, it's difficult to deal with it. Infrastructure is absolutely lagging. Especially something like Houston, when the Port of Houston is closed because of fog, you have a problem for 3-4 weeks, even if it's only affected for 2-3 days. That's going to get worse. The more you parcel, the more impacted you are, because you have to go to multiple berths to fill your ship, and you discharge in multiple berths. On the long-haul trade, the bigger the ship, the potentially more cost-advantaged you are. But if it takes you 40 days to load your ship because of all these delays, you're losing a lot of that cost advantage. What we try and be is extremely disciplined in the deviations, so that we're calling few ports to load. But it's going to be an increasing challenge.
Sure. Talking of challenges, over the next 5 years, what do you think is the biggest threat as a sort of macro trend to the chemical tanker business?
Other than shooting ourselves in the feet when things get better, which has been a historical shortcoming, I think the really poor job that the shipping industry at large does towards regulators and towards the outside world is a problem. Demands are rightfully high. We need to be safe. We need to be efficient. But look at this ballast water. The industry is going to spend $5 billion putting ballast water systems on board. IMO has now said you have to have them from the 8th of September. Every dry docking that you do, you have to put them on board. The U.S. Coast Guard hasn't approved any systems yet. And it's absolutely critical that these ships can trade internationally. And what a horrible thing that would be if we had to put different systems on for the U.S. If it goes wrong in that coordination. And how did we get there? But there's more coming, because we have the same with air emissions. And some countries will go faster than others. But we have to have the same rules, and we have to have the same regulations for the international trade. And, there's otherwise an enormous amount of capital destruction going on. So I think that's a real big issue. Same on bunkers. IMO's leaning towards 0.5%. Will there be enough volume? Will people be able to turn things around quickly enough? We are all in favor of dealing with the climate issues and with emissions, with ballast water, but it's got to be done in an efficient way, and it's got to be in a technically feasible way, and we're really falling short there, I think.
Sure. I think we've probably covered most of the key topics. So at this point, we'll probably just open to the floor if we have time, Nicholas, briefly, for any questions.
We've either done a good job or we've made it so complicated.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.